Welcome to the Squawker Talker podcast, brought to you by PlayZoola, a new way to bet on football based on judgment rather than odds. Use your knowledge to make predictions and win cash by beating other players and climbing the leaderboard. Sign up now and receive an instant £5 bonus with your first deposit of £5 by visiting the website po.st/playzoolapod or following the link in the description. Without further ado, here's the Squawker Talker podcast, a Player of the Year special. I'm joined today by Mohammed Butt. How are you doing, Mo?
Doing pretty great, Greg. How about you? Yeah,
not bad at all. And Jake Entwistle is just joining us for his first Squawker Talker podcast appearance.
Yep, debut. Very excited.
Been a long time coming, I think.
I know. I've been building up to it.
Unfortunately, as you may know, if you do follow Jake on Twitter or any other social media profile, he is a big fan of Kylian Mbappe. But because this is a very Premier League-focused podcast, we might not get to talk about him too much, but I'm sure in the future we'll have to come back and grab you for some of that. But as you're saying, this is a special to look at the players that have been nominated for the Player of the Year Award and the Young Player of the Year Award. And we'll start from the top by looking at the players that have been nominated. As you may have heard already, Eden Hazard, nobody's surprised by that one. His clubmate at Chelsea, N'Golo Kante. Harry Kane, the Tottenham striker. Romelu Lukaku, the Everton striker, who's also the only player outside the top six to be nominated. Zlatan Ibrahimovic from Man United. And Alexis Sanchez of Arsenal. Any of those players jump out to you as unworthy of their nominations, Jake?
I don't think anyone in here is undeserving, because when you think about their individual contribution to each of their teams, the numbers are ridiculous. You've got Sanchez, most goals, most assists. Ibrahimovic being lauded as carrying Man United this season. Lukaku, 50.9% of Everton's goals he's been involved in. Harry Kane again, goals galore. Kante, his interceptions, and Hazard is just, everyone's talking about him this season. So for me, all great nominations.
Mm. We've written down some of the stats here behind these nominations. I mean, it's hard to find weaknesses, but there are a couple of players with a few wrinkles to their name. Alexis Sanchez, as Jake says, has been all about the goals and assists for Arsenal. He's been directly involved in 44.4% of their league goals, either as a scorer or creator. But 14 of his 18 goals have actually only come against bottom half opposition. Whereas Zlatan Ibrahimovic, another player who's been pretty much everything for United in the final third, he's been involved in 47.83% of United's league goals. He's 35. I mean, he's the oldest player in Premier League history to score more than 17 goals in a single campaign. No centre-forward has completed more through balls. However, no player has missed more big chances. Even at home, his conversion rate is just 12.3%.
Yeah, it's quite ironic, really, because he's spent the last few years just grinding Edison Cavani into the dust beneath his feet, and then this year he's sort of morphed into Edison Cavani.
His
movement is spectacular.
His movement is spectacular in a very slow 35-year-old
He's 6'5" and he's 35 years old. I mean, he was never fast, and that's why I don't understand sometimes United are hitting balls instead of challenges. Like, what are you doing? Mm. He's not Griezmann. You haven't signed Griezmann yet. Calm down. But look, he's 35. He's doing incredible work as a 35-year-old. I mean, 17 plus goals, 17 goals this season in the Premier League. You know, he's going to hit 30 probably in all competitions. You know, if you watch the guy, if he presses and runs, I remember Barcelona played Arsenal in 2010 and he actually really pressed in that game. He scored twice, but he was just soaked in sweat and dead in his feet after 50 minutes. He could barely move. He's spending all his energy on moving around or running around, and he just doesn't have anything when it comes to the finish. I mean,
do you think it's tiredness, really?
I think it is. I think it is a sort of fatigue, because when you're so physically drained, you lack the mental sharpness. If you look at so many of his missed chances, the big chances he misses, he just tries to whack it right at the goal, right, whack it into the back of the net. And I think that's what he does when he's tired. He hits these big wind-ups with his leg and just tries to thrash it as hard as he can. And it just, either defenders get the block in or the goalkeeper saves it, because he can see clearly where he's going to put the ball. When he's more physically sharp, he finds more deft ways to finish. In the League Cup final, for instance, that header, you know, really planted it properly, you know.
But then you look at his conversion rate away from home. I mean, overall, he's got a conversion rate of 20.3, which is quite respectable for a striker. And that's because away from home, he's putting the chances away. So I don't know. I'm struggling to see why he would be more tired at Old Trafford compared to Wembley or away.
I think because he ends up making more runs, as weird as it sounds, because away from home, Mourinho's tides tend to be more pragmatic, more cautious in their use of the ball, and they use more of the dribblers out wide and only hit long balls into Zlatan, whereas at home, they have more of the ball and they're dominating games and they're just creating more chances, which means he's spending a lot more time running around into spaces, trying to find spaces, and of course, against United, because United have more of the ball, teams are just mass ranked to defenders. So he's having to move harder, move more to find more movement, and as a result, he's getting more fatigued, and then he's just whiffing on chances when they come to him.
Well, that's nitpicking the players that are there, but are there any notable omissions or glaring omissions from that list of players this season that haven't got on there? We have had a shout from Andrew Beasley a friend of the pod, who said, Sadio Mane, where is he? I mean, we were talking earlier about all these players have been so important to their team this season. Sadio Mane, Liverpool are half as good without him.
Exactly. That's a great point. Sadio Mane is probably one of the standout omissions in terms of you going to talk about other players. He's the one that I would say should maybe be included, because similar to Sanchez for Arsenal, everyone's saying that when those guys don't play for those teams, they look completely different.
Mm.
So they've missed him in the African Cup of Nations when he went there. They've only just won a game without him in the side. So in terms of importance to a team and the difference he makes to an individual to a team, which is what I think this award is about. It's player of the year. So it's how they contribute to each game. And there's no doubt that Sadio Mane not only makes his team plays better, but he's got the stats and the goals to back it up.
Yeah, that's what I would think. It's interesting. I think, you know, in American sports, they have the MVP award, most valuable player. Now, I mean, that's come to just mean the best player. But I think in true spirit of the award, it is like that's where you would bring, let's say, Sadio Mane to the forefront. Because he is probably, of everyone on this list, apart from maybe N'Golo Kante, he's probably the most valuable player. Spurs have even shown that they can win without Harry Kane. You know, if you're showing with Rashford up front, they can win without Zlatan. It would be MVP, would be Lukaku and Sadio Mane. I mean, because it's not so much that Mane is a great goal scorer. I mean, he is a good goal scorer, but a great one. Doesn't score buckets of goals, doesn't get buckets of assists. But you just watch the way Liverpool play with and without him. It's night and day, and he's such a crucial part of their system. But I understand why he's been omitted, because if you look at the rest of these lists, they're all massive protagonists of leading clubs, and they've been there pretty much all season. Mane went away for the African Cup of Nations.
You know? I guess that explains why Philippe Coutinho isn't on the list as well. He's had a, if you talk about Liverpool night and day, Coutinho has a first half of the season, he was one of the best players in the league. Second half, he's only just kind of coming round, isn't he, really?
Yeah, but since the injury, he was just not, you know, he hasn't been the same for a long time, and he's only now starting to show. So it's just, Liverpool had that massive black hole in the middle of the season, and that's just going to affect the voting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one player who has been completely consistent throughout the entire campaign and probably only got better as well as it's gone on is Christian Eriksen, and he's not on the list, and he's top of the Premier League chances created, joint top for assists with 11. Nobody's created more than him, and I was looking at the numbers earlier, and I think for players that have, sorry, the numbers have left me, but for the most creative players in the league, he's right up there for tackles and interceptions of that specific group of players as well. So he's a hard-working playmaker. I think I've seen some Tottenham bloggers call him a defensive playmaker, if such a thing can exist. he's such an important part of how Spurs play. Is he unlucky not to be on the list as well, Jake?
You'd say it sort of sums up Eriksen's career, not in a horrible way, and I'm not trying to disrespect him at all, but he is that sort of player that does so many good things and he just goes under the radar.
Mm. Maybe that's why he's effective, though, because he goes off on the radar.
Exactly.
On
maybe
the
that
well.
Is a reason in itself why he should finally get some recognition, because, as you said, joint most assists in the league with Gylfi Sigurdsson. He's creating so many chances. His set-piece delivery is incredible. He adds, like, his partnership with Harry Kane and Dele Alli at the moment. Those three are just working and complement each other exceptionally well.
Mm.
And you'd argue that Harry Kane and Dele Alli, Harry Kane is obviously nominated for this award, maybe they wouldn't score as many goals. Maybe they wouldn't get as many of the plaudits as they are if someone like Christian Eriksen wasn't behind them being chief string
providing
string
the
pillar.
Nuance, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know who Eriksen reminds me of right now is Luka Modric, right? When he was at Spurs, fantastic playmaker, didn't really get the appreciation he should have gotten. And then Jose Mourinho identified his talent, took him to Real Madrid, had a very rough first season, but then look at him now, he's arguably one of the best, if not the best, central midfielder in the
but
world.
But even Eriksen, like last season, people say, where's his end product? This season, he's stepped up with goals. He's getting more assists as well.
Exactly. And not only is he getting goals and assists, I mean, end product is nice, but when you look at him sometimes, he looks like he could play for like Modric or like Iniesta, you know, in that sort of like, he's clearly an attacking midfielder, but he looks like he has that skill set where you think if
you
drop him deeper.
Are you trying to sell more of Spurs' players to Spain, though?
I mean, you know.
They're not going to be happy with you.
I'm sorry, Spurs. No, he just looks like he could play for Barcelona or Real Madrid, honestly.
He's doing it in front of our eyes.
I'm tapping out.
Sorry, Daniel, sorry. But
speaking of
true.
Players in that mould, I mean, there's four players here, four midfielders, I must say, as well, that people have been shouting at them. Not shouting at them, shouting at us, asking why they haven't been included on Twitter. And they're all in Manchester. And they are David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Ander Herrera, and Paul Pogba. Any of that four, do you reckon, have done enough this season to be on this list? This season. I'm not talking about their overall potential. Yeah, yeah. This season, have they done enough to be on this
of
list?
Of those four, I would say Ander Herrera definitely has done the most to be.
Who would he dislodge in that team?
This is the problem. It's like he's done enough to be on the list, but it's like, who does he dislodge? Well, then he's like, ooh, well, now I can see why he's not on the list. You know, that's the thing.
which would kind of mean he's not good enough to be on the list.
No, no, the list was longer. He's done enough.
You could put him in. You could put him in front of Alexis Sanchez.
Would he be your choice for seventh? Is that a fair thing to say?
I would definitely say so. Yeah, I think of any player, he would be my choice for seventh. Maybe you could even put him ahead of. I mean, Alexis Sanchez is the one I would say. Maybe you could put him above. He's just been so essential. You look at him at the start of the season, Mourinho didn't really want anything to do with him, and he's just. The same thing with Van Gaal. Van Gaal didn't want anything to do with him. You know, he proves himself essential to every manager because he's such a talented and all-around versatile talent that he can just he does whatever the manager needs him to do. Mourinho needed a player to play defensive midfield, but do so in a dynamic way, move the ball well, tackle, be aggressive, be a bit of a jerk, if we're being honest. And Ander Herrera can do all of that, and he's thriving.
Devil's advocate, though, is that a case of Herrera proving himself to these two managers, or United having such a broken, unbalanced squad that they haven't got any other choice than to play him?
A little from column A, a little from column B, I think. You just look at Herrera and the way he constantly steps up, and United are demonstrably poorer when he doesn't play. And and Paul Pogba, you look at how good he's been at times. Nearly all of his great games have come alongside Ander Herrera.
100%,
you know, just 100%. Absolutely fundamental to Manchester United's success, and sixth place, but success.
They've won the EFL Cup.
The EFL Cup. And I just think he's massively underrated. I think he of all of them. I mean, they've all been very, very good this season. But I think Ander Herrera definitely.
But on the point of Paul Pogba, Jake, what have you thought of his season? Because obviously it's a contentious issue, the question of how good he's done and how good he hasn't done. There was actually a really good piece by Aaron West for Fox Soccer today, talking about how it's not about goals and assists. He basically, all the play goes through him at United, and that's kind of a responsibility that people haven't appreciated the extent that they should do. But he's only behind De Bruyne for successful through balls. He's kind of been everything for United in terms of passes per game and all the rest of it. He probably hasn't done enough to get on the list this season, but do you think he can do it next year?
I think that's exactly it. Paul Pogba hasn't had a bad season at all. That's one point I'll always make. Yes, £89 million is a lot of money, but he's just turned 24 years old. If 2 years down the line he turns in 10 goals and 10 assists in one season, you then ask the question, if you were in the position where you could have bought him for £89 million, would you have done? And then I think 80%, 90% of people would say yes, he's now proved it. It's unfair to judge him completely his ability on this season because it's not up to his standards. For Juventus, he was incredible. But even then, this season hasn't been bad. As you said, the through ball stat, his
rate, as Mo said, if he had a faster runner in front of him, who knows?
His raking passes are incredible. Like, there's snippets of Paul Pogba's ability that I think season after season we're going to see more of, and I think he will eventually dominate the league. He's that good a midfielder. And when we talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic's chance conversion and Man United's in general, the problem for playmakers is that assist number won't go up until someone puts that in the net.
Exactly.
Like, Paul Pogba has created a lot of chances that he's not necessarily a number 10 like Eriksen. He doesn't play up front like Alexis Sanchez, who are all top up there in chances created. He's doing this from deep, and he's creating chances that other players will struggle to even comprehend creating.
Oh yeah, I mean, you look at Pogba in the final third, most for Man United, most chances created, most take-ons completed,
most passes,
through balls. You know, he's having it's the way we value players, right? With the idea, because Real Madrid have spent broken the world transfer again, and Barcelona have spent so much money on Luis Suarez on forwards, we've come to identify financial the size of a transfer fee with goals and assists, right? Because Bale, Cristiano Ronaldo, Luis Suarez, goal and assist monsters, especially Suarez is ridiculous the last couple of years, and Cristiano, of course, I mean, my goodness, and. That's what the idea of what value actually is, right? Look, Paul Pogba could get 5 goals and 5 assists and still be worth £89 million. It's not about that. I mean, look, end product is great, and if he can add that stuff, that's even better. But what he will bring, what United have signed there, is a player that's going to run their midfield. Midfielders develop at different rates. Xavi didn't really start dominating. He crushed everyone in the whole world. But didn't start doing that until he was 28.
Are you trying to sell Paul Pogba to Barcelona?
No. Honestly, this is just a fair reference. Look at Pirlo. Look at Pirlo. Right? Didn't really start owning everybody till his mid-20s. The midfielders.
There's a maturity you need for playing deeper. The intelligence.
It's a restraint for Juventus. He was essentially an attacking midfielder. He played in the midfield three, but he had license to roam. United had to try training him to play deeper. He's learning to run, run games alongside Ander Herrera. It's a process. He could be worth £89 million and not even get a single goal. It's not about that.
I kind of think that the price is a red herring anyway. You look at the performance compared to other players in the league. probably be quite happy with it if he was worth, I know, Granit Xhaka's amount. But we were talking then before about Juventus not being quite the team Man United not being the team Juventus were with Pogba in there. And that's partly because of the system, because the players are playing together for longer. One side that have got a system that has worked, at least for these two players, is Manchester City. While they've got lots of problems at the back, their 3-8 system of basically liberating De Bruyne and Silva through the middle has worked a treat for those two anyway. Silva probably more so now because he's having a great few weeks playing in that role. But do you think either of those two have done enough to even be on the fringes of this list this season?
I think De Bruyne did. De Bruyne was fantastic. Until they brought Yaya Toure back into the team and started playing De Bruyne as a winger, which I don't know what Pep was doing there, but I think he was waiting for Sané to get adapted, maybe. I don't know, but it didn't work. But when he's been playing De Bruyne as a central midfielder, De Bruyne has just been lights out. And in that 10 match unbeaten run, 11 match run, wherever it was to start the season, he was incredible. And I fully believe this. I mean, they'll need to replace David Silva. He's 30 years old. I mean, he can't keep going forever, but Kevin De Bruyne will be one of the best central midfielders in the world by the end of next season.
Not in the top six for players right now.
No, not right now, no, because I think he had a period where Pep was using him as a winger and he struggled later on as City have struggled, you know. But with that young three up front, Gabriel Jesus, Raheem Sterling, Leroy Sané, playing at Silva, if Man City sign if they sign a defensive midfielder and some fullbacks, I think De Bruyne will take off.
Well, we're going to get a bit onto City's young wingers a little bit later on. But one player, we talk about unplayable footballers, Dele Alli.
No.
We're going to get onto the young player shortly. But why isn't he on the player of the season list, Jake? I mean, he's scored more league goals than any other midfielder in Europe. Forget his age. He's right up there.
That's exactly the point.
He should be in the running to win this, shouldn't he?
Dele Alli is one of my favourite players. Like, even from last season, the goals he was scoring, the technique this guy has at 21 years old is, like, it's incomprehensible. He's an absolute phenomenon. He's already proved that. As you said, more goals than any other midfielder. He's got more league goals than Griezmann, Hazard, Mane, and even across all competitions, more than Neymar. I know they aren't in the Premier League, but it's just context for how good this guy is at 21 years old. And you would say that, again, Harry Kane's been injured. His goal tally is more than Dele Alli's, but he's the striker. So in terms of replacing someone on the list, if you want to keep this sort of spread and not make it too Spurs heavy, if that's any sort of rationale, then you could maybe argue that Dele Alli deserves it more than Harry Kane. Also, he probably does deserve it more than Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Sanchez, Lukaku, arguably as well, because of the team he plays in. But that's the thing. He's 21 years old and they've done him for Young Player of the Year. He's nominated for that. But why can't you then make the step when there's a talent this unique and this rare? We deserve to praise him for what he's done. 21 goals directly involved in deserves recognition.
At 21.
Exactly.
he definitely deserves recognition, but I think the thinking behind their nomination is he's going to win Young Player. He's going to win.
He'll be the first person since Rooney to win it back to back. Yeah, well. That's quite a fitting kind of. You know.
It is. It's like in films when they nominate actors for best supporting actor, even though they may be, or best actor, because they think they have a better chance. Like Hannibal Lecter was in like 10 minutes of Silence of the Lambs, and Anthony Hopkins got nominated for best actor because they felt he had a chance of winning it.
Coffees for Closers. Everyone remembers that scene from Glengarry Glen Ross.
Exactly. You nominate where you think he's going to win, and he'll win Best Young Player.
But Owen Griffiths asked off Twitter, what of the defenders? Are defenders under-recognised when it comes to end-of-season awards? Everyone says, oh, there's no good defenders these days, but there's been some really great seasons from defenders in the Premier League this season. David Luiz for Chelsea, says Azpilicueta for Chelsea. I think he's played more passes than any other defender in the league. He's their little ball sponge next
he's
to David
ever-
Luiz.
Present as well.
He plays everywhere. Toby Alderweireld probably been the most commanding and also most skillful centre back in the league. I know we said David Luiz, but Alderweireld actually beats him for both long balls and accuracy of long balls. He plays out the back like nobody else. And Gareth McCauley, who at 35 is another golden oldie in the Premier League, and this surprised me given he's playing for Tony Pulis for West Brom. But no other player has completed more take-ons inside their own defensive third than Gareth McCauley.
Gareth McCauley, Britain's Sergio
Ball
Ramos.
Player, exactly. And also, I mean, that's the centre-backs, but we've seen the two systems that have dominated the league this season are Chelsea and Tottenham's 3-4-2-1, and also City have played a similar system at times as well. And that's all come down to their wing-backs. Is it surprising that Walker, Rose, Moses, Alonso, they're not on this list? They've been so influential in this season, Jake.
Again, it's what we said earlier about this sort of perception. If you look at face value, do they have any goals and assists? No, don't put them on the list. It's such a negative way to look at a player's contribution, but unfortunately that is what you're drawn to. If you've seen that Harry Kane has scored 19 goals in 23 games, you're thinking he's a great player. You know he's a great player straight away.
Mm.
Anyone that looks at that stat will think, yep, he deserves to be there. But when you're watching the football games week in, week out, and as you said, these systems have been dominating the Premier League, no one can handle Tottenham at White Hart Lane when they play this formation at the moment. Kyle Walker and Danny Rose, Kieran Trippier comes in the side and looks like a world beater at right back.
Ben Davies isn't too bad either.
Exactly,
even
that's what I mean. They're playing in a system which is making them look so good. And again, they might not have 10 assists from the right back position, right wing back, but the way they stretch the play, the take-ons, the way they're up and down, they deserve it just for stamina to be Player of the Year, just because how they can keep going in that formation.
Mm. We're just going to move on quickly now, before we move on to the Young Player of the Year, to actually look at who actually deserves to win the actual overall Player of the Year. Dele Alli's not nominated, so we can't pick him, unfortunately. But just a quick rundown
and
of the... Well, he's not nominated either. We're going to go to the six that are nominated, just looking at their stats again. So Eden Hazard, most successful take-ons in the final third with 78. You can't get the ball off him when he gets in those areas. And most impressively, that's the hardest area of the pitch to actually do a
exactly.
take-on as well.
Because yes.
the defenders are always all over you. Most goals from fast breaks is up to define them. We call them counter-attacks, or many other people do, with three. No other players even scored three. And when we say that, we're talking about his goal against Arsenal went down as a fast break. So that kind
of
goal.
And his recent one as well.
Against Bournemouth.
Exactly.
Absolutely fantastic goals. Well, and those are two goal of the season contenders as well.
Exactly.
N'Golo Kante. Kante has won more tackles in the opposition's half, 22 this season, than any other Premier League player. Probably not surprising to anybody. And no midfielder in the top six has won the ball more times through successful tackles and interceptions this season than Kante, 135 of those actions. And he's won more tackles and made more interceptions than any Premier League player since the start of last season.
He's a defensive monster.
He is. But some people have said that you compare him to Hazard. These are arguably the two favourites, the two front runners. Is Hazard starting to show that he's got a bit more worth to win this? As Costa fades, he's now picking up the slack in attack for Chelsea. Is he starting to show he's got the...
I think... You can't look past N'Golo Kante this time. For Leicester, again, it's kind of like a repeat of last year where he was just as important to Leicester, but...
And now this glitzy winger's coming along, nicking his glory.
With last year, you could at least say that a glitzy winger doing that for Leicester, Riyad Mahrez, they bought him for like £600,000. There was something extra special in that. Eden Hazard's won it before. We've done it before. We know he's a world-class footballer. Mm. It's almost nothing new.
But then is Hazard playing at a higher level now than when he last won the award?
I don't think he is. I think he's playing basically the same level. And I think even less impressively, this system is designed to basically prevent him from having to do any defensive work.
Back to your favorite teams, Barcelona and Real Madrid. That's what they do.
I'm just saying in terms of the way it's set up to enable him to not do any defensive work is through N'Golo Kante.
Yeah.
N'Golo Kante is. If you look at this Chelsea system, right, without N'Golo Kante, it doesn't work. It sounds ridiculous. 3-4-2-1 is a great formation, but without someone who is, with the way that Chelsea line up, with the players Chelsea have, without N'Golo Kante in there, it just doesn't work. He's such a defensive...
As Leicester said themselves, I mean, Hazard said it as well. He said it's like playing with twins. Leicester said it's like playing with two players.
Yeah.
Is he your favourite as well, Jake?
I sort of lean more towards Eden Hazard, just because these ridiculous... displays of skill.
He's equaled his record in England for goals scored in a league season as well, and he's probably going to break it.
He's definitely going to break it. He's sort of had a little trough, but he's peaked again, and I can see him adding at least three more goals to that tally, which would be an incredible return. And I agree that N'Golo Kante does facilitate him. He allows him to express himself this much. But if we're saying that Eden Hazard is a world-class winger, and we're saying that he's playing the similar level to when he won it before, then again, this thing about price and what dictates how you should get it is Riyad Mahrez, just because he was £600,000 doesn't make him a better player. If Hazard is playing as well as that as Riyad Mahrez last season and is a world-class winger, he should win it. There's this sort of idea that sometimes they're not sympathy nominations, or it's probably too harsh to call them that, but you get sort of swayed with the narrative. But my opinion is, if a player is playing world-class football, then they should win the award. And I think Eden Hazard, despite N'Golo Kante being phenomenal as well, I think Eden Hazard has just proved he's world-class this season and should pick up the award.
Well, for world-class performances, I give you Romelu Lukaku. He's leading the way with goals scored. He scored more league goals than Middlesbrough have as a club. He scored 23, they scored 22. He's also scored the most goals from big chances. You compare it to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's scuffed those big chances. And I mean, people said he's not a big game goal scorer, but he's actually scored more goals against the big six than any striker in the Big Six this season. And if Everton keep their current rate up and Arsenal keep their current rate up, we talk about importance to a team season. Lukaku could fire Everton to the top six.
I'll tell you what Lukaku's going to get for that award. He's going to get the golden boot, which is what top goal scorers should get and be happy with.
But is he going to also win a move to one of the top six sides as well?
I mean, I think so. Yeah.
And if he does this for a top... I know you're going to ask a question, but if he does this for a top six side next season... Would he then be up for the award properly? Would he actually be taken seriously?
I mean, I think so. I mean, you look at the Chelsea, Diego Costa, is he staying, is he going? And, you know, Romelu Lukaku. Drogba has recently come out and said that it'd be great if he signed for Chelsea. You know, all signs point to him going back, because his problem with Chelsea wasn't Chelsea, it was Mourinho. He didn't go with Mourinho. Mourinho didn't want to give him a chance. I think if Costa goes, which I think is looking increasingly likely, I think he'll be... keep wearing blue, but you know, now in London.
Yeah, with Lukaku, it's just, so he's got 23 goals, but he's got 6 assists as well. So he isn't proving to be just that top goal scorer that we're perceiving him as. And another thing with him is he's the only player in the Premier League. I know you have to score 15 goals to do this, but he scored 5 plus with his left foot, 5 plus with his right foot, 5 plus headers. He gets a bit slated sometimes for his hold-up play.
But that's not his job.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as saying he's a complete forward yet in terms of all-round fantastic at absolutely everything. But in terms of a striker who's going to score you goals, he does that. As we said, he's contributed to over 50% of Everton's goals this season. That's more than what we were saying for Sanchez and Ibrahimovic. His contribution to that Everton side, whether it is in easier games, he's still scoring 23 goals in a season. In the Premier League, not many people are doing that recently. So to do it in a side that, again, in the top 6 games, they're playing slightly more defensive, it's so much harder for him to then score them goals. And he's still managing some of them. So Romelu Lukaku he's not, again, my pick for it. I would go for Eden Hazard, but I'd say he pips the likes of Sanchez and Ibrahimovic.
He's
a top-class striker.
I'll say this. His hold-up play is improving. I watched the game against Leicester. His hold-up, it's not there yet, but under Koeman, of course, I mean, he's so great with target men, with Graziano Pella and that. You can see his hold-up play is improving. If he goes to Chelsea with Conte, I mean, you could get even better.
We'll have to see. But Romelu Lukaku and Harry Kane and Dele Alli, he might not be in the sixth for the player of the year, but all three of those are actually in the young player shortlist.
How is Harry Kane still in the young
players? We're going to get onto that very shortly. But we were talking about it a bit earlier on. Leroy Sané is also in there. He scored 8 goals with his last 13 shots on target in all competitions. Absolutely lethal from the German. He's really coming to form in the second half of the season. Michael Keane is also in there. Most aerial duels for a defender in the Premier League. And he's also shown his class of playing in his back three for England under Gareth Southgate.
Looks great
very,
there, yeah.
Very impressive in his debut. Seemed to unlock the potential of John Stones a bit as well. We'll get onto that as well a little bit later on. Jordan Pickford as well. The big name in British goalkeeping, this season. He's most saves in the Premier League this season. And we always talk about how goalkeepers are made to look better when they're busy than they actually are. But he does... I follow David Priest on Twitter. That guy is a goldmine of goalkeeping knowledge, and he seems to be impressed with him, and that's good enough for me. So maybe one to look out for. Arsenal are apparently interested. But looking at those, are there any... Just to go through the process we did earlier, any names there that you don't think deserve to be in, and any players who should be in that aren't selected in this list?
I would say Pickford, Kane and Lukaku shouldn't be in there. But Pickford, you can make an argument, but Kane and Lukaku shouldn't be in there just because... How is Harry Kane still in this? No, I'm sorry. It's ridiculous. It should be for much young 23 at the start of voting, which means you can beat 24 and win it.
Michael Keane's 24.
Yeah. Well, there you go. He shouldn't be in it either.
but Adam Handani, as Squawker's very own, has asked this point. So the rule is you must be 23 at the start of the season to qualify. Is the young player of the season category flawed? 24-year-olds nominated to the award seems a bit unfair. Should it be made for players only 21 and under? Should it be you have to have played X amount of games or something like that?
I think 21 and under makes a lot more sense. I think in the context of modern football where players are emerging at younger ages, I think maybe 22 and under, you can't be 24 and be called a young player anymore.
So maybe it should be you're 22 at the start of the season rather than 23.
Yeah. You'd argue there's sort of like the cutoff point in the perception, again, of football in general is 23. You have under 23s and then you don't have anything. There are under 23 tournaments, etc.
Yeah.
That does exist. So when you're not under 23, that's surely the natural progression into not being a young player.
Yeah. But even in some of those tournaments, you can be 24 at those tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe some more clarification. And I don't necessarily disagree, because when you think Zlatan Ibrahimovic is 35, Michael Keane's 11 years younger than him. He's quite young. He is quite a young player. I know we're saying that you can get a quality player, Kylian Mbappe, at 18. But in terms of all this, 24 is still young. I don't necessarily disagree with that. My frustration and what I think is just ridiculous with these awards is that Harry Kane and Lukaku are there. If one of those did win Player of the Year award, that means they should win Young Player of the Year award.
Yeah.
So one, by not having Dele Alli in that award, we could just come up with a completely contradictory award system where, as we've just argued, Dele Alli is probably should win the award, if not Player of the Year. But what happens when, again, we said...
Let's say Lukaku wins it.
Yeah, let's say Lukaku wins it and then Dele Alli picks up Young Player of the Year award. That makes Romelu Lukaku's Player of the Year award absolutely redundant.
It really doesn't mean
anything because he's been nominated for another category and he's not won it. And it's considered the lesser category.
Well, do we need, I don't know, Breakthrough Player of the Year instead? Some kind of more specific
I think
award.
Maybe just don't nominate players for both awards.
Yeah. That's the simplest way around it, first of all, because then you say, yes, we appreciate you've been that good and you've been so good that we're putting you in with the big boys. Yeah, they have a lesser chance of winning it, but it's that idea that if you're good enough, you're old enough sort of thing. So put them in Player of the Year award. In 2015, as Eden Hazard won Player of the Year, he was nominated for Young Player of the Year. Harry Kane won it. It just doesn't make any sense. And then I feel bad for Harry Kane because his award, in my eyes, doesn't mean anything because he somehow beat the Player of the Year to it.
Well, let's say we take out then Michael Keane, Harry Kane, and Romelu Lukaku from this list. Yeah, we'll keep Dele Alli in because he hasn't got any other list. Which players would you have in instead? I've got a list of other potential players. One you're probably going to disagree with because of his age, but Ross Barkley, Tom Davis, both Everton lads, Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, and 24-year-old Paul Pogba, who was 23 at the start of the season. Alex Iwobi for Arsenal, dipped a bit in the second half, but very impressive in the first half of the season. Wilfred Zaha, who's attempted more take-ons than any player in the Premier League this
24
season.
24 years old. No.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, he is, of course. Well, he's another one that can't go in.
Exactly. So that if we're going along with this sort of at the moment, this is how they've been nominated. So for a moment, Zaha definitely should be considered. Leroy Sané has been very impressive in these recent weeks, but he's young player of the season. Even his teammate Raheem Sterling's got more goals, more assists.
Yeah. And Raheem Sterling's, we talked about Hazard earlier, having the most take-ons, most complete take-ons in the final third. Sterling's got the most complete take-ons in the penalty box.
I'm confused as to why he's not in there and Sané is. That's because he's had a better season than Sané. I mean, and Sané's been very good, but he took 6 months to adapt to playing in England. Sterling's been great since basically the jump. I don't understand why. And he was one I would put in there instead. Absolutely. Harry Maguire, maybe him too.
What about James Ward-Prowse? I was looking at his numbers are actually really impressive this
season. He's gotten better as the season's gone.
He definitely has, but with Ward-Prowse, I really, really rate him as a footballer. He's still, you forget he is 22. As cliched as that sounds, he's been around for a while. He's captained the England under-21s for years now. And he plays as a mature footballer. His set-piece delivery is probably up there with the best in the Premier League, not just young players. He has some incredible attributes, but with him, he goes, not missing in games, that's sort of an unfair, easy statement to make, but his impact on some games isn't as much as you know he could make.
Yeah.
He's got exceptional ball-playing ability. He can create chances through set pieces and open play. And he perhaps doesn't quite do it enough. Although he is more to the end of this season, that's been his one problem so far. He hasn't been able to put in his great performances 70% of the time in a season so far.
Got a question through on Twitter from George Starkey in Mid-Eye, who asks, which one of this season's Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year nominees is most likely to go on and win the Ballon d'Or in the future?
Paul Pogba. Oh, wait, no, he's not nominated.
He's not nominated.
They're none of them.
Dele Alli, definitely. Dele Alli's 21 and we're just saying he should win Player of the Year award. He is world class already. He's shown it for two seasons as well. He scored, one of these seasons was MK Dons, but he's now scored 10 plus goals in three league seasons. No one does that at his age. And the way he plays, his footballing brain, which has been discussed a lot at Squawker, his intelligence is beyond 21 years.
He does work off the ball.
He's an incredible footballer.
He looks like Thomas Muller at times, like a young Thomas. The way he drews just into space. He's not a midfielder. He's not a forward. He's a round.
The match winner, isn't he?
Well, we're talking about sending Spurs players to Spain. If he goes to one of the big two. Well, I mean, he's not going to win the Ballon d'Or at Spurs. Let's just be honest, right? I mean, I love Pochettino, but no, it's not going to happen. But if he goes to one of the big boys, I mean, that's definitely impossible, I suppose.
Well, Eden Hazard's another player who's been linked to a move to Spain to Real Madrid. Has he got the potential to be a Ballon d'Or winner still?
Yep, I'd say that as well.
Mo's not so sure.
See, the problem with Hazard is he's going to go to Spain and it's just going to be Hazard versus Neymar, and Neymar's going to have all the Brazilian media behind him. And I just think when it comes to...
Mate, don't underrate the Belgians. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. We're going to quickly move on to the final question of the podcast because we are coming to the end of our show. Manager of the season. Just quickly, the shortlist hasn't been announced yet, but who would your nominees be, Jake?
I think you'd go for the top two in the league at the moment. Pochettino, that Spurs team at home. I think they've been more impressive than Chelsea at home. That they're unbeaten still. They're absolutely smashing anyone that steps onto that pitch. And although they haven't won the league or might not win the league, I think it's a bit too far for them. He's created this team that play exceptional football. They're young. They know what they're doing. They're scoring loads of goals. They're not conceding any goals. They have all of the ball. They win the ball back quickly. Everything that we praise each individual team for, they're good at set pieces, but not much else.
Mm.
Tottenham, you say, they're good at set pieces. They're good at scoring goals. They're good at creating chances. They're great at defending. And he's created that through his system, his ability to change system. And Conte has put together a winning team, a title-winning team with a title-winning system. But Pochettino, in terms of resources and the players he's used to achieve his goals, I think he deserves it.
Yeah, plus Conte's only playing one game a week. It's like, I don't want to denigrate his achievements.
I kind of feel like Poch was at some point as well. That European campaign did not go well.
I don't want to denigrate Conte's achievements because obviously he's done very well. But, I don't want to say it's easy to implement a new system when you've got the entire week to train your players in it. Like, you look at Pochettino, Guardiola, Mourinho, even Wenger, man. You know, these guys have got to manage every 3 days. They don't have time to train tactically with their... with the players. The fact that Poch has managed to switch to 3-4-2-1 in the middle of the season when he always played 4-2-3-1, that's phenomenal. I think Poch is a big one. Poch and Marco Silva are my favourites to me.
Well, I was going to say, Mark, you talk about a manager doesn't have much time to deal with things.
Yeah, exactly.
The return Marco Silva's had out of hall. I mean, they still might not survive, which will probably kind of stop him winning any kind of award. But if they did, we've seen Tony Pulis in the past win or at least be considered for this award from saving a club from relegation. And speaking of the big man himself, Tony Pulis has got West Brom up into eighth this season.
This is where I'm worried now, because this is where Stoke imploded. He got his Stoke to eighth and then the players were like, okay, can we play good football now? And he's like, no, we can't.
This glass ceiling is bulletproof.
and this is what I'm saying. I'm really worried that it's going to take,
that's for the future. Should he be considered for manager of the season, given what he's done with the Baggies?
Yeah.
You would definitely say that as well, because of the managers of other big teams. So usually there's this sort of link between you're doing really well with the team and winning the award because you've come first, second or third, or you've scored loads of goals. And that's usually only exclusive to the top teams in the Premier League.
Mm.
But when you look at how poorly, relatively, Jose Mourinho, Wenger, even Guardiola to an extent, he's played some incredible football. He's had tough time. Players aren't there, etc., etc. But you'd expect someone with those resources to be up there. And then sort of, he hasn't exceeded expectations, so he can't be nominated. Whereas someone like Tony Pulis with that West Brom side, they've done exceptionally well with what they have. And the fact that these other big teams haven't performed in their usual commanding way creates an even bigger space for him to just go right into those nominations.
I guess Sean Dyche is another one that probably deserves to be mentioned in this conversation because of what he's done with Burnley this year. We kind of take it for granted that they're kind of mid-table now. But anyway, that's all we've got time for today on the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. So you do join us again next week and do send in questions as well for the podcast. We're actually going to be reposting our Howard Webb interview. There's been a lot of questions about refereeing recently. We're going to post it again on Easter Monday, so just tune into that. Mo, thank you for coming on. It's been wonderful as ever.
I love coming in here. It's fantastic. Home away from home.
And Jake, thank you for providing us with your debut.
Yep, loved it.
It's wonderful.
Can't wait to
have
be back
you on
now.
Again soon. Definitely. Maybe with more Mbappe chat in the future.
Ligue 1 Monaco. Definitely. Done.
100%. Well, thank you for joining us and have a great Easter and see you again soon.